I would like to preface my remarks by saying that this vast topic of warming food on Shabbos has a number of different perspectives, and today we're only going to be discussing a single perspective, which is the perspective of the malacha of Bishul B'Shabbos. Bishul B'Shabbos, one of the 39 categories of work, one of the Av Malachas, a very serious issue. At times there are Yisurim mid the Oraisa, Torah prohibitions, as the Lamatech Malachas are. We have to make sure that on Shabbos we don't do anything of the sort. So, in source number one, we are taught a particular leniency which overcomes the problem of Bishul on Shabbos. That is, Kol Shabbo B'chamen Milifnei HaShabbos, Shoren Oso B'chamen B'Shabbos. Which means, in our parlance, Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Once it's cooked already. You can't cook, you can't cook food. That's right. They say you can't kill a dead dog. So you can't cook a cooked food. Once it's cooked, and that's the end. As Rashi explains, Rashi on the left side over here, we talk Kol Shabbo B'chamen. We say if it was on Friday, it was already heated. Ein bo mishum tikkun, sharei nitkan kvar. It's already been, malechas machshavas means a tikkun, you're accomplishing something, you're achieving something. It's already been achieved. It's already been cooked before Shabbos. So how can you be chayav on Shabbos for cooking it again? It's already been cooked. And therefore, since it's already been cooked, there cannot be any second obligation for an individual who cooks it on Shabbos. Rashi's expression, ein bo mishum tikkun, sounds like he really accomplishing nothing, accomplishing zero. It's done already. If so, if Rashi means it in that sense, this could be a very, as Rashi, in typical fashion, one word, maybe saying something which is very, very important. There's a major dispute among the Rishonim. After what point do we apply the principle of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul? So I'm skipping now to the last page of the Makoros. Source number four. The quote of the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, Tavshel Shen is Bashel Kol Tzorko. We're talking about a Tavshel which is completely cooked. And we're going to skip to the third line. Avol Dovor Shen is Bashel Kvar V'hu Yovesh. Something which is dry and has been completely cooked. Mutal Ishroso B'chanan B'Shabbos. Okay? You might put it in the hot water of the Kli, what we call a Kli Rishon, on Shabbos. So once again, the Shulchan Aruch uses the expression Kol Tzorko. The only time we say that it's permissible to heat food on Shabbos is if it's already been completely cooked, Kol Tzorko, before Shabbos. This is a quote of the Rambam. He uses the expression Kol Tzorko, and it's very possible that Rashi, in those two words, who says, Ein bo mishum tikkun sharei nitkan kvar, may in fact be agreeing with this opinion, which is attributed normally to Shitas Haramba. The reason I'm making so much of this is because it would appear that most Rishonim disagree. Most Rishonim have a different outlook as to what does it mean, Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, and they have a halakhic approach to it. Their halakhic approach is that whatever has been halakhically cooked before Shabbos may be reheated on, or even further cooked, on Shabbos. What is that halakhic level? Take a look over here, in the end of source three, just a few lines above the source four we just came from, the last three lines. The ikal mitche, the Rosh is saying, and this context we'll come back to. The achelon is bashel kimachol ben derusoi. Now machol ben derusoi, who is this ben derusoi? You know, we heard about Ben Azai and Ben Zoma, Ben Tzadikim. Ben Drusoi is a bandit. The Jesse James of the Talmud was always on the run. And because he was always on the run, he could only eat his food partially cooked. How hard was he running? Well, to my focus, Rashi and the Rambam. According to Rashi, he could only eat his food 1/3 cooked. According to the Rambam, it wasn't so bad. He ate it half cooked. How exactly you measure 1/3 and 1/2? The Chazanish suggests that we measure it in terms of time. How else are you going to measure it? The softness is no real measure. He suggests that from the time the cooking process begins, when it's, we call Yatzel lettuce, but it's very hot, and it takes, It takes 3 hours to cook. So after an hour and a half, perhaps it would be considered Machal Ben Tosoi according to Shitas HaRambam, and after an hour according to Rashi. Others disagree. But anyway, once it reaches Machal Ben Tosoi, then call a Makare Vishulo Chayim. You make it cook more quickly, it would be Chayim. The Achash in his Vashel Kamachal Ben Tosoi, Efshar, the Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. So we have two very important things in this line on the Rosh. One, he finally says it. Ein bishul achar bishul. The Gemara doesn't say that, use that expression. Different expression. It means the same thing. Ein bishul achar bishul. And furthermore, he says, once it's been halachically cooked, and halachically cooked means what? Kemachal ben Tosoi. How do we know that? Because we learn in the Gemara that if a person takes raw food on Shabbos and cooks it, kemachal ben Tosoi, he would be chayav. But the halacha cooking to make him chayav. So therefore, let's say a person did it on Shabbos, he'd be chayav. So if someone else did this on Friday, and I do it on Shabbos, I go beyond Kemachal Ben Tosoi, I'm not chayav. But wait a minute. The logic of Rashi cannot be employed over here. Rashi said there's no tikkun, kvar nitka. Not true. It was nitka in half. I'm doing the second half. It was nitka in the third. I'm doing two thirds. So you see clearly from the Rosh that ein bishul achar bishul doesn't just mean I'm not accomplishing much, as Rashi and Rambam would have it. But a bishul achar bishul means once a halachic bishul took place, there is no second culpability of bishul for anybody. Whether the first bishul took place on Friday or if it took place on Shabbos by some other sinner. But once it's cooked halachically, whether it be a third or a half cooked, we apply the principle of a bishul achar bishul. In this matter, we are bound by the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is clear, the very first four words of source four. Tapshel shen is bashel kol tzorko. We only apply the principle of a bishul achar bishul after it's been completely cooked. Okay? This is dispute number one I wanted to discuss with you this morning. Dispute number two has as its major source the Rosh. The Rosh is source three. The Rashi Pirish Liel Zemashek Zera Shemi Artiach Kederesh and Itzanana Shiyirza Lahatmina Vyartichena Betchila Ba'ur Beninza Mavashel B'Shabbos. Wait a minute. We have a case of a pot of food that's cooled down, and nonetheless, you can be in violation of cooking on Shabbos. This seems to go against everything we've just learned. We learned Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. And yet Rashi seems to have a case where there would be Bishul Achar Bishul. How is that possible? This is what's bothering the Rosh. So the Rosh, the very last line of this page, says, "Lamadnu she'af betavshil shenizbashel v'netstanein shayach be'bishul." What happened to a bishul after bishul? Says the Rosh, "No, kevan sheyesh bo mashke." Here, the famous rule in the Rosh, attributed originally to Rashi, we'll call it in our language, "Yesh bishul akar bishul bedover lach." When it comes to salads, ain bishul after bishul. The sugya on the Kuf Mem Hei, from which this Mishnah is quoted in the Aflamites, is discussing various types of meat, poultry. Those are examples which are not only illustrations, but those are the only illustrations according to Rashi. Only when it comes to solids do we say, Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. With respect to liquids, we apply the principle of Yesh Bishul Achar Bishul. And this is explicit. Last page. Showing also the Chama B'Shabbos, Hainu Dover Yavesh, and he gives the examples. Turn the gold to the Rabbi Abbas. That's exactly the Gemara's example later on that Kuf Mem Hei. And the Raya is back and forth. So here too is a dispute whether Yesh Bishul Achar Bishul Balach or Ein Bishul Achar Bishul Balach. A very, very, very major dispute among the Mishonim. Once again, we at first glance have to follow the Shulchan Aruch. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? So we just read it. Again, source 4. Tavshon is Basha called Sarko. Yesh bo mishum bishul in Nitzane. Okay? And this is true when Hani milish yesh bo bishul acha bishul. But tavshon she yesh bo morok. If it has soup, you would be chayav. Notice, it doesn't have to be only pure soup. It says tavshon she yesh bo morok. There could be a combination of meat, pot roast, meat and soup, or whatever it may be, a combination of solid and liquid, there is an obligation, a culpability of bishul because of the liquid which is contained within it. Because of that liquid, you would be chayav. Okay? So the Shulchan Aruch is clear. The Mechaber, Shulchan Aruch holds two chumras. One, the principle of Ein Bishul Ach Bishul only applies after it's Mevushal Kol Tzarko, against the Rosh. And number two, that we apply the principle of Bishul Ach Bishul to a Dover Lach. Now, how do we define having cooled off? Im Nitzdanim. That's a very important point. Im Nitzdanim is the seventh and eighth words or so in the Shulchan Aruch. And what does it mean? So the Mishnah Brura, which is source 4a, explains as follows. In Nitzdanim. Hainu she'ein hayat so ledes bo. Now we know, generally speaking, how we define heat in halacha is called yad so ledes bo. Literally the hand recoils when it reaches this, when it touches it. Now, there's a dispute among the poskim of today, how hot must it be for a hand to recoil? Estimates vary very, very, very widely. Some say it's as little as 104 degrees Fahrenheit. It's already considered yad soledes. It's called 40 degrees Celsius. That's the biggest chumrah. That's a question whether it's really true. Rav Shlomo Zalman tries to up the ante to 45 degrees Celsius, 113 degrees. And some agree and some disagree with that. Rav Moshe Zatzal, although he doesn't give a specific and firm shear on the low end, says, if it's important for us to know, to be sure that it reaches yad soledes bo, in order to make sure that it's considered to be hot, you have to go as high as 160 degrees. One place even writes 175 degrees. Later authorities say they don't understand where Moshe got 160 from. It's a little bit on the high end. But certainly, if it's 104, 113 degrees, there's no guarantee that it's yad soledes. We call yad soledes bo lechumra, not necessarily lekula. Where you draw the other marker, is it as high as 160 or somewhat lower? A dispute between Moshe and other poskim, primarily in Eretz Yisrael. We'll see soon some practical examples where this comes up. In any event, so according to the Shulchan Aruch, once it sinks beneath that magic line of Yad Soledes Bo, it's considered to be Nitzdane. It's not considered to be cool down. And if you re-up it to Yad Soledes Bo, you are in a serious violation of Yesh Bishul Achar Bishul, presumably, unfortunately, to Nisim and Atorah. So a person who takes a liquid food that was fully cooked, fully heated, now it dipped just beneath the yad soledes bo, whatever that happens to be. It's still somewhat warm, it's above room temperature, but it's beneath the yad soledes bo. According to the Shulchan Aruch, you are in violation of an iser d'oraisa of bishul, because yesh bishul achar bishul bedover lach. It's a very serious issue, obviously, very serious. Okay. However, we are, most of us in this room are Ashkenazim. Anyone who's a Sephardi must follow the Shulchan Aruch, and once it goes beneath the Atzoletis bowl, that's it. You cannot reheat it. What is the opinion of Minig Ashkenaz of the Ramah? So the last line of this source 4a tells us, Kol zeh udasa mechaber. Aval ha-ramah lekamon b'siv tetzvav v'hagor kosav. The kol zman shlo nitzdanen legamri nogu lehokel de'ein bo mishum bishul v'ayin shom. So this one line excerpt is enough for us to spend some time on. This is an interesting compromise which the Ramah introduced. So, the Ramah was known as the great compromiser. So the Shach often writes in the Yerodea that who was the Chacham was Yerodea Pesher Dover. This is the Ramah who's always making compromises. This is not Henry Clay. This is not someone who's a politician who was sort of splitting the difference between various political points of view. This is a halachist. The Ramah is giving us a compromise, and compromises are always the most difficult positions to understand. We can understand very well why Ein Bishul Ach Bishul B'Dav Olah. It says in the Gemara, Ein Bishul Ach Bishul. We don't make no distinctions of made. We can even understand the other view. Why Yesh Bishul Ach Bishul B'Dav Olah? Why? What's the lumbus behind Yesh Bishul Ach Bishul B'Dav Olah? So the Mepharshim already explained. When it comes to a cooked food, chicken, so once you cook the chicken is cooked. You may put the chicken and take it now, put it into the refrigerator, or even into a freezer. The chicken is still cooked. It's cooked chicken in a freezer, in a refrigerator. Everyone understands that the food is cooked. Cooked means it's prepared. It's softened as a generally speaking, when as part of the cooking process. The fact that it's now cold and you want to serve it hot, okay, that's very nice. It's nice to serve it hot. But you know what? You could probably have it cold too. There are many individuals who have cooked foods and they have it cold. They like it cold. You know, they may have it hot originally and then they'll put it in the refrigerator. Remember, before microwaves, it was such a hassle to heat things up. People often had their food cold. Just to be able to, they didn't want to have the hassle of reheating it. Everyone understood you had to do it. I remember growing up as a child, before microwaves, so we had chicken, we'd have the chicken, it would be cold. And we had kugel, the kugel would be cold. Not just on Shabbos, it's only during the week. This didn't pay to heat it up, it was very good. That's how we grew up, it was fine, no problem. One thing we never had cold was chicken soup. Because chicken soup cold, it's hot as can tam. It's you know, you can't have chicken soup cold. You just can't have it. So, but that's not just a matter of a bubble mice or a kitchen sprout. That has a lot of ramifications. Precisely because you can't have the chicken soup cold, that means it sort of lost its status of being cooked once it cooled down. In other words, heat plays a much more significant role in the edibility or the drinkability or the servability of liquids as opposed to solids. Hence, if you have liquid and it cools down, it's no longer, its cooking is already history. Sure, it's cooked. We're not saying that cool down chicken soup now breaks down into its original part of chicken and water. We're not, know nothing. We understand if you take cold chicken and cold water and put it in the refrigerator and leave it that way, it will not produce chicken soup. And therefore, once the chicken soup has been produced, even though it's not been put in the refrigerator or freezer, it's different chemically and taste-wise, etc. Afalpike, nonetheless, since people don't want to have their chicken soup cold, it's considered as having lost its status of being cooked. Hence, if you now heat it from the beginning, you are chayav according to the Shulchan Aruch and bishul min haTorah. Because we don't say ein bishul acha bishul. The first bishul is what we'll say it's history. It's been canceled out significantly enough, not totally, it's still chicken soup, but it's been sufficiently compromised that someone who heats it now is in violation of an issa d'oraisa of bishul acha bishul. And where's the natural dividing line? Of course, yatzal eresbel. That is the definition of heat for all purposes. That's the definition of heat from the beginning. If you are taking water on Shabbos, and you're heating it to the level of Yatzal Letzbo, the Gemara is enough memo of days and Shabbos, you are in violation. If it's less than Yatzal Letzbo, you're not in violation. So it stands to reason that that's the dividing point. When it comes to liquids, it's a halachic dividing point. It's called Yatzal Letzbo. That's it. Bingo. That's it. Stop. That's the red line. You go over it, it's considered to be bishul. You dip under it and go back over it again, you're again the bashul. Yesh bishul, ha bishul, v'davulach. This you can understand.
How do you define Yavish?
That's a very good question. It's a very, very good, excellent question. Excellent question. How do you define Yovesh? Now, we know that scientists among us certainly know that everything which is, seems dry has within it liquid. Most things in the world are mostly water, including a piece of chicken or a piece of kugel.
Otherwise it would be inedible.
Okay, we have a real scientist, a real top scientist sitting in front of us. But even plain scientists who went to elementary school know that this is true. There's a lot of liquid you don't have to be a PhD in physics, you know, there's a lot of liquid in everything, in our bodies, in the food, and everything.
So that is, hold slowly.
So therefore, the authorities generally assume that whatever appears to us as being solid has a halakha of solid. And even if we see some droplets forming on the top of it, we still consider it to have a status of solid food. There is even an opinion, which is rejected by most, which says we'll follow the majority. If the majority of the volume is solid, we'll give it a status of solid, even though it's wallowing in its gravy. We don't generally accept that. The Prima Gun talks about that, but generally think that's not accepted. It has to be an insignificant amount of liquid. In other words, you shake it all out, and there's all going to be a little something left. That little something, we have a right to disregard. There's an interesting question. Again, beyond the scope of the shiur today. Can we only disregard that when the little bit of liquid is on top of a solid food? Or in general, can we disregard small amounts of liquid? I'll give you a very simple example, very serious example. You have a cup of tea on Friday night, it's delicious. Okay? Now you want another cup of tea. So what do? You go to the kettle or the urn and you fill up the cup. But wait a minute. On the bottom of the cup, what's there? A couple of little drops, a few little mashus from the first cup. A little bit is left over. A very serious halakhic question. You have a right to pour that second cup of tea over the first of the droplets, the residue, the remainder of the first cup. It's based on a number of considerations. Number one, if you assume Yesh Bishul Acha Bishul V'Davar Lach, We assume that if you, after you finish your first cup, only a few little drops, by now they're, I'm sure the physicists will approve of this, they completely cool down, they're drops, few drops right away they cool down, it's not to keep them warm, it's not to hold them warm. They're literally room temperature after a fairly short period of time. Number two, the issue which we cannot go into at length today, an issue of what we call irui. Irui means you're not putting it in a pot which is on the fire, you're pouring it from such a pot. Nonetheless, we assume the halacha that irui is a very serious problem. Irui is mevashel, at least what we call a kadei klipa, maybe even more. So therefore, at first glance, you may not pour that second cup of tea over the residue of the first cup. So what do? Take another clean cup, or simply dry it out. Now, usually it's such a small amount, you won't run into a different malach called schita. So you're going to run from one cup, one half malach to one other. But if it's such a small, you dry it out. Sometimes the towel and dry it out, we'll take a different cup. And other poskim are lenient. There may be various reasons for leniency. One of them may be that insignificant amounts for some don't count. But this is not necessarily an outgrowth of your question. In your situation, you have a few drops of liquid on a piece of chicken. So it's secondary to the chicken. Here, it's nothing, it's on nothing but a cup. I'm just mentioning that a few drops is relevant in that case as well. Let me go back to the, yes.
What about if sometimes there are certain meats or chickens that are actually better the second time they're reheated? So you're actually improving it and you're making it,
That's a very good question. If it's reached a status that's called fully cooked, that's another issue. What's called fully cooked? Is it, to give the American words, is it rare, medium, or well done? What's called fully cooked? My gut is medium. Medium, I assume most people, but for the most people, that's already fully cooked, even though some may want it well done. You're suggesting another question. Even if it's fully cooked, however that's defined, it may get better as it's cooked even more. There's an expression on the Gemara called mitstamek v'yafalo. It gets even better. Doesn't matter. Even that tikkun, it's true, it's an improvement. That's not called it's a tikkun official. It's called something else. Okay, let me go back. So, but how do you defend the compromise of the Ramah? What's it based upon? Here we find a major dispute among the authorities as to what's the basis of this Ramah. The Chazon Ish, I hear the word Chazon Ish, he's one of a number of great Gedolim who assume that the Ramah fundamentally must be of the view that Ein Bishul Acha Bishul B'Dovolah. Many Rishonim hold that way. So on the level of the Raisa, there's nothing to worry about. He threw in some kind of a Chumrah, some extra stringency to it, if somehow double lach is completely cold, then we'll throw in a chumrah to be machmir b'dirabonon yesh bishul achar bishul b'double lach. So writes the Chazon Ish. Now, this is very, very critical. If the Chazon Ish is correct, we can have a leniency in the case we just described of pouring a second cup of tea on the remnants of the first. And the Chazon Ish seems to have held that way, and others who follow Rav Moshe seem to have held that way, others who follow that Mahalach. They say the Chachamim are only machmir if it's a significant amount of liquid that's being reheated. A few drops, the Chachamim were never machmir. They're never meant to be machmir in such a case. Okay. This is one approach. Frankly, for many, many years, I assume this is the approach, because that's what the Chazon Ish said, that's what Rav Moshe said. And even the Mishnah Berurah is mashma a little bit that way, but doesn't say it as explicitly as the others. I assume this was the way it was. My Rebbe of Salavation, Zichron of Avracha, once suggested a different approach. Maybe there are more holes, yesh bishul achar bishul b'davolach midorais. But, major but, according to the Maran Bet Yosef, the Mechaber, once it sinks beneath the Yatzal Lettuce Bow, it's lost its status of being fully cooked as a liquid. That's the red line. And you bring it back over that line, you're chayav in HaTorah. The Ramah, however, says, no. The only reason we say yesh bishul achar bishul b'davolach is because the original bishul, as you said before, is history. It's disappeared because it's no longer helpful. It's now cooled down. But as long as we have some residual heat from the original cooking, we cannot say the original cooking is gone. It's still extant. The proof is that the soup or the tea is not room temperature. It's above room temperature. Therefore, there's a real remnant of the original heating process. So even though now you're moving it up from low to standard lagarme all the way up to boiling, doesn't matter. We cannot say that you took something whose original cooking was canceled out and you started from scratch and your chayv is cooking. No, this is what Rav Soloveitchik, the Chachamim of the Rosh Hashanah, suggested. I believe, although I'm not sure, that he felt that if this theory is correct, the definition of lone etzdan legamri is literal. It is not completely cooled down. What is completely cooled down? Room temperature. As long as it's above room temperature, so the fact that it was once cooked is still evident from the heat that it still contains. Have an understanding? So upon further research, it seems to me, not only is Rav Soloveitchik correct, and the other poskim, I think, v'mchilas klodov, I think are not true to the original sources, but I want to even be more machmir. Not me, I'm not trying to be machmir, that's not my style, but just because the original sources seem to lead to that conclusion. Let's go back to original sources. One classical source is the Mogen Avraham. The classic source, Mogen Avraham, he's the one who wrote the Perush on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Mogen Avraham, in the end of Siman Reish Nun Gimel, a Siman all about a different aspect of heating food on Shabbos, in two places, Sifkot Lamed Zayin, at the end, very, very end of Sifkot Mem Gimel, says clearly that we Paskin as Ashkenazim, Yesh Bishul Achar Bishul Balach Min HaTorah. It's a Torah violation. A Torah violation with all the significance contained therein. If for a Yisrael to avoid it, and especially in this one of his contexts here, for a Nachri to avoid it. We know certain Darabonans, we say Shvus to Shvus, is no. So he says, Araisa of Bishul Achabishul V'dover Lach. That's one thing. That's a very important. And if you look carefully, in the original source of the Ramah, which is a Truma Sadeshet, Simon Samach Vav, Truma Sadeshet uses an expression, it's an Av Malacha. Generally speaking, the word Av Malacha means what? A Din D'Oraisa. One could get out. I'm aware of ways one could get out of it based on a different example he gives in Holtzah. But the simple read of Av Malacha means it's a D'Oraisa. Okay. We have a Truma Sadeshet, we have a Mogen Avraham, and we really don't have very little contrary evidence of an early nature. The earliest that I could find the sentence to Rabbanan according to the Rebbe was a sefer called the Minchas Kohen, a fairly early source. But again, the earlier source seems to indicate it's a Din D'Oraisa. But number two, if one looks in the really early sources, the Or Zeruah, they're going way back, which is quoted by the Rambam in the sefer Darkei Moshe, he says a different definition of the Tzana Legamri. The definition of the Tzana Legamri according to the Or Zeruah, and presumably when the Rambam says that he means that, is it's so cool down that you can't get away with serving it as hot food. Now that means it could still have some warmth in it. But you know yourself, once in a while there's a miscalculation and the chicken soup comes out of fry on your bowl and you're waiting for that steam to come up. What steam? What steam? I don't kind of put my finger in. What finger? You put it in. And it's there's something there. It's not like it's tap water. It's not room temperature. But it's not much more than room temperature. It's not enough. You won't use it. Thank you very much. I'll just pass. It's Eino Roy Lechol Machmas Chamimuso. That's the expression going back to Rishonim. Dutifully copied by Shulchan Aruch Harav and other later sources who spell it out. It seems to me, therefore, that if one wants to be true to the original sources of the Ramah, number one, Bishul Achabishul Adavalach is D'Oraisa. And number two, Nitzdanei Legamrei means it's cooled down so much that it simply cannot pass as a hot drink, hot soup or hot tea. How hot is that in degrees? I'm not sure. You have the ability to take a food thermometer and to insert it into soup or into tea and see how many degrees it is that you say, oh, this is already cooled. I can't, this is worthless to me. That's interesting. It may vary with the machol. It may vary with the person, with the individual. We would try to determine what is the actual lettuce bowl, based on certain Rishonim. If you look at the Kaf HaChaim, based on earlier sources, he says that the criterion of the actual lettuce bowl is, if it's the actual lettuce bowl, it's too hot. You're not going to be able to drink it. If it is not the actual lettuce bowl, then you are able to drink it. It's a machlokas, a poskus, a rashman, shabbos, a lot of different sources. So I said, oh, that's cool. No problem. Let's get a food thermometer and bring it into the yeshiva and have some tea. You know, we have an urn with tea, and let's see. So two Talmidim of the yeshiva volunteered to drink tea with the thermometer. And, you know, within the two, there was a discrepancy of 20 degrees. One was able to drink the tea at 140, and one could only drink the tea at 120. So, I'm not saying that the Kaf HaChaim is correct, that is the Atzeh Lettuce Bowl cutoff, but if it is, you have obviously 20 degree difference within two people. Now, you want to know how hot it has to be passable as hot. My guess is everything will go down accordingly. You know, if I like 140, I'll settle for maybe 105. I like 112, I'll settle for 100. I don't know exactly what it's going to be. Maybe it's above body temperature. If it's above your body temperature, that's considered still warmer than you are, so it's a little bit warm. But if it's less than your body temperature, even if it's above room temperature, you call this IK. This is not, can't pass as warm. I don't know. It's a suggestion. I'm just being very tentative here. I'm happy to have your input. I know there's a lot of email going on. To email in to me that you tested it with the food thermometer. And for you, the cutoff point is such and such. And it's a little bit above it. You can't have it at all. And it'll pass for hot by you as such and such. I'd appreciate it. We'll do a database and we'll give it out. people in the room. I'm serious. So the more people introduce their own personal data, the better database we have. It's a very serious challenge. Okay. There is one more topic in the few minutes remaining to me that I haven't even begun to discuss, which is also based upon this very sugya. And that is a Tosfos that's found on the second page of your source. So we've discussed so far two major topics. One, is it only after Mavushal called Tzark or even after Gracha Ben Gisoy? And two, what about Bishlach HaBishl with Avalach? Three opinions. Either there's always Bishlach HaBishl with Avalach, once it goes below Yatzel, let us flow. There's never Bishlach HaBishl with Avalach, or the compromise view of the Ramah, the Tzad and the Gamri. Within that, there are two views, whether it's the Raisa or the Rabbanim, and there are at least two ways of discussing the Tzad and the Gamri. You can't eat it as hot or it's just above room temperature. Okay? And it seems to me, based on the original sources, I'm sorry to report to you, the most strict view of that opinion within the Rabbah. Okay. Source two. Kol Shema B'Kamim L'Lifnei HaShabbos. Nispashel L'Gamrei. Once again, not enough Machal Ben Busoi. Nispashel L'Gamrei. And the Gemara continues, Kol Shaloba, whatever was not cooked before Shabbos, Madichin Oso. You may pour over it. L'Pirish Rashbam. It's probably a typo. It should be a Rashbam. The Mepharesh the Iru Kiklisheni. Aha. According to Rashbam, if I pour over something, it does not have the status of a Kli Risho. We think most of the Pharisee and Shabbos, Kli Risho and Mevashel, Kli Sheni, Eino Mevashel. What about Iwi? It's neither here nor there. It's in between. I'm pouring from a Kli Risho onto something. So if you hold like the Rashbam, also Shapir. The Ein Shachah, the Ein Shon, also the Kli Risho. Avra Madichan, also the Kli Risho. There at Iwi, because Iwi is not a Kli Risho. We understand very well. You can't put it into a Kli Risho, that's considered to be Bishl, even after that Kli is no longer on the fire. It doesn't matter. It didn't arise from the Pashtas. Whereas Iwi from the Kli Risho is okay. Aval Apira Shabbeinu Tam, the Mepharesh, the Iwi Avik Kli Risho. Two brothers fought it out. Rashbam, that's not the only time they fought. But they weren't fighting over marbles. Right? The Rashbam Rabbeinu Tam are fighting whether Iwi is Kli Risho or Kli Sheni. So Akoch Ramadichan also Mikli Sheni Kama. That you're only pouring from a Kli Sheni. You're not allowed to pour from a Kli Risho because Iri is Mevashel. V'yim Kenes tells us a question. My Iri Madichan Afilu Shorin Ami. Why may only pour from a Kli Sheni? You should be allowed to put the food into the Kli Sheni. After all, we know Kli Sheni ain't Mevashel. Tos gives two terutz. Gomeri. Da Afilu B'Kli Sheni ain't Shorin. Why? The whole Da Mayim Chamin Merzik Mevashel. This is a chumrah heard around the world. According to this opinion of the Ri, although the Gemara is beferish, Kli Sheni Ein Mevashel, that's Midaraisa. But Midarabonim is the prohibition of Merzik and Mevashel. Merzik and Mevashel. Although the Gemara later on says you may place Tavlin into a Kli Sheni, Tavlin is different. Why? Heinasuyin Lamatega Shakadera, below Merzik and Mevashel. Somehow spices are just simply, sweetening or somehow otherwise flavoring, they're not Merzik and Mevashel. What does that mean? What do the words mean? It's a question what it means. I think now that it means is as follows. You're not attempting to cook the spices. If I put chicken into a pot, I want to cook the chicken and eat the chicken. If I put some flavoring, some spices into a pot, I'm not trying to cook the spices. I'm just trying to give the chicken that I have there a different kind of a taste. So therefore, tavlin is not a merzik and mevashel. It doesn't look real cooking. It's not because it's a cliché. Why is
it
the term Kli Shlishi is not found explicitly in the original sources, except for one that I know about. That's the Urayim. The Urayim says Kli Shlishi is the same as Kli Sheni. So a Kli Shlishi Lekula is a fairly recent invention. And I believe Rav Soloveitchik was opposed to it completely. He thought it was a Kli Rishon, and Kli Sheni means two to infinity. As long as it's hot enough yet to let us go, it's considered to have the same status. And if a Kli Sheni is prohibited, so is a Kli Shlishi. That's how he felt. Rav Moshe had a different position. And anyway, let's go back over here. So therefore, Tavlin is not, you're cooking these spices. It looks as if you're just flavoring the Kedaya with that spice. That's what's with the Kli Sheni. Everything else would be prohibited as Mefzik Kemevashah. The second Teretz in Tosis, Inami, who I've been showing also, Tosis in the second opinion, totally rejects the Chumra of Mechazik and Mevasa with respect to Kli Sheni. Of course, the question is, how do we follow Lahalacha? So the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo himself, quotes the Chumra of Kli Sheni only in one place. In the entire Siman Shin Yud Ches, as many as 16 Sifim, once. Ironically, in a case in which we could argue there's no Bishul at all. That's the source number 5. Yesh Misha Omer, the Dovash and Nefa O Nitzle, something which has already been baked, let's say a piece of challah. In Bishul Rachakach, but Mashke Yesh Misha Bishul, there's a famous chumra known as Yesh Bishul Acharafia. So you can't put your challah into your pot of soup. The also leads in Tash, Afilu Bekli Sheni, Shayat Soledes Bo. The only time that the Shulchan Aruch has a chumra of Kli Sheni is in a case, the Yesh Bishul Acharafia. What an irony, what a paradox. In a raw food, where the called the all postman was in Shalav Bishul Daraisa, the Mechaba never mentioned the Chumra of Kli Sheni. The one place we mentioned it is in the case of the Bishul Acharafia, where according to many, many Rishonim, there's no problem at all, because it's subsumed on the Bishul Acharafia. That's where he puts it. V'yesh Matir. So said the Kli Sheni. Why did the Shulchan Aruch only mention the Chumra of Bishul Acharafia, of Kli Sheni by Bishul Acharafia? So I believe the answer is as follows. He's got another reason to be Machavim Kli Sheni, over and above that of the Tosfos. And that is something called Kalei HaBishul. You have in that very original source that we saw, Chutz Min, Kuliyas HaYispin, and Maliyach HaYoshin. There are things which can be cooked more readily than other types of foods. And it's possible with respect to these foods, which can be more readily cooked, you have to be Machavim, be strict, even in a Kli Sheni. And the Shulchan Aruch felt that if you will work with the assumption that there can be a din of what we call Bishul HaRafia, it's what's called Kalei HaBishul, precisely because it's already been baked and it's so soft. If you assume that halakhically there is a prohibition of putting a baked good into a pot of water, that would extend not only to the original pot, which is a Kli Rishon, but even to a Kli Sheni. That's a Chumrah of the Shulchan Aruch. The Mogen Avraham is much more machmir and applies the principle of Mechzik and Mevashel, as well as the principle of Kalei HaBishul, to all foods except those explicitly found in the Gemara as being permissible. What are they? Tavlin, we saw, and water. Now, of course, the big question, the Rashi's famous question was about water. What do you mean? I put water into Kli Sheni, take a teaspoon of water, put it into a Kli Sheni which came up from the earth, which is 200 degrees. It's obvious it's going to reach a point of a very hot temperature. How is it permissible? So the Rashi has an expression, the reason why it's so hot is not because the cold water became hot, because the hot water didn't become cold. Our physicist is not going to be happy. Rav Shlomo Zalman never attended university. He also wasn't happy. What does that mean? To make a long story very short, my take on Nairaj was he's saying, not saying physically, pointing empirically, that the cold water doesn't become hot. Of course it becomes hot. What the Rajah meant to say, I believe, is that the purpose of this mixing of the two waters is not to heat the cold water, rather to cool down the hot water. And therefore the Kli Sheni, it's what we call not Derech Bishul. Not Derech Bishul, we know in general from Melechus Machshev, it has to be Derech HaMalacha. If it's not Derech HaMalacha, it would not be Chayav. I believe that is the correct interpretation of the Rashba. Time does not allow me to read you Source 5a, which is the Mishnah Brewer's discussion of how you take care of this thorny problem of preparing tea on Shabbos. I want to close with one final remark. First again, I want to thank Rabbi Sachs for his forbearance. I only spoke 40 minutes. I just started late. But I thank him for his forbearance and this week and the previous weeks as well. And number two, I welcome the new addition to this program of Midreshet Yom Rishon for women. Believe that next Sunday, I think men allow this to the tapes, I plan to discuss a totally different aspect of this same problem of eating food on Shabbos, which are rabbinical gezeiros of Hachzara and Hanukkah. This shir and that shir are two sides of the same coin. Thank you for coming.